The history of the Catskills is pivotal in the history of our country as well as the history of New York State. It is described in great detail in Steven Silverman's The Catskills, Its History and How It Changed America. Silverman's book brings to life the beauty, vastness, and turning points of the Catskills' history, sharing stimulating stories of the region's influential entrepreneurs, artists, gangsters, politicians, musicians, and outcasts. Vital to the development of America, the Catskills region was the birthplace of New York's own Declaration of Independence, a central location for America's Industrial Revolution, a rising resort town with hundreds of hotels, and an artistic muse for the 19th century Hudson River School of Art and 20th century entertainers like Mel Brooks, Woody Allen, and Joan Rivers. It's a great pleasure to welcome Steven Silverman to the roundtable this morning. Steven, thank you very much for being with us.
Joe, thank you. After that introduction, I don't think there's anything I can say.
Oh, well, I hope so. You got to fill 11 minutes. All right.
Okay, I'll sing for you.
That is the task ahead of you. The name of the book, The Catskills, Its History and How It Changed America. You're going to be all throughout the region, and I'll give dates out in a few minutes. All the great events that you have going on throughout our listening area. What brought you to this project?
For years, a friend of mine had a house up there. She was the movie critic, Judith Crist, and her house was in Woodstock, and I kept saying, Judy, it's fine to sit here and play Scrabble, but, you know, where are all these famous resorts I always heard about? And she kind of waved them off and said, well, they're gone. But I was curious about them, so I started to dig into, you know, where they were and what happened to them, and in doing so, I said, wait a minute, you know, there was a lot that went on up here. It's not just the Borscht Belt. So that basically is what set the fire under me.
So when it comes to putting something like this together, and if people when they see the book, they'll realize this of just how beautifully illustrated it is, how beautifully it's put together. I mean, obviously there's the text, but there's a lot of archival photographs and materials that you have found. So what goes into a project like this? How many years are in this book?
All told, the book took me 5 years.
Wow.
That said, I had a full-time job, so it was weekends and vacations. But the illustrations took a year just by themselves. The text was finally in shape, and, you know, I wasn't sure what was available. It ended up taking a year. I went into archives, museums, art museums, private collections. Listen, some of the pictures I even got on eBay. Yeah. They were all family shots of, you know, families going away for the weekends and camping shots. And maps came from old newspaper offices, you know, that were liquidating their archives. We know what's happening in publishing. And somehow the timing was always just right. I found the right illustration at the right time. You know, there were the normal places, the Library of Congress, you know, you want to... a lithograph of Robert Fulton, go there. So it really, from everywhere, in the northeast of the United States, mostly.
When it comes to how to confine such a large, sprawling subject, did you have rules for yourself?
I figured out early with my editor, Vicki Wilson, who's a legendary editor at Alfred A. Knopf. She also has a house in the Catskills, so that always helped spur this along.
Right.
But also, this is not a secret, I was an editor at People magazine for 20 years, so what I was attracted to were, I call them my lunatics. There were such eccentrics who found their way into the Catskills. I kept thinking, well, if I tell the story chronologically with interesting character after interesting character, starting with Henry Hudson, who was not a nice guy, by the way, spotting the Catskills as he was sailing up the river trying to find India, you know, is a perfect place to start and continue from there. And sure enough, I found them, in any of the industries that were there, bluestone mining, leather tanning, even the resort industry, and the gangsters who made their way up there. There was always a crazy, larger-than-life character to grab my interest, and I figured, you know, would interest the reader.
One of the things that I find interesting about the book is if you're looking at themes, one of them is recurring is that the Catskills is often a refuge. The Catskills often throughout this history has become an attraction and a place where people go to escape whatever.
The most blatant example is during Prohibition. Dutch Schultz and Legs Diamond were up there. It got too hot in New York City. And, you know, you could assume a new identity up there, which is what people did. In their cases, it was, you know, the Catskills were also great places to hide bodies. It was also a great place to set up your distillery. You know, given the terrain, the distance from New York, and yet it was still close enough. But brand new identities could be assumed. It was especially the case in the leather tanning business for some reason. That really attracted the renegades, and it was very lucrative. It polluted, it denuded the forests, and the waters, you know, became polluted with all the chemicals. But, you know, it is indigenous to the Catskills. For whatever reason, it's almost mystical. You know, people went, you know, the fact that Woodstock took place in the Catskills is sort of a perfect example. Of course, where else would it have taken place? Everybody there was free to take off their clothes and run around and listen to music. And there you have the Catskills.
One of the things that you mentioned this, of course, early on, but one of the things I found interesting in the book is that there were resorts in the Catskills even prior to World War II. It's just after the war when they started to cater to Jewish families.
Yeah, Jews, in fact, were kept out of the Catskills until around 1912, 1914. It was heavily anti-Semitic. You could, you know, everything started with the Catskill Mountain House, which set, you know, the model for mountain houses in America and sort of grand hotels. And that started in 1825. Sunday church service was mandatory. Well, that excluded a certain clientele. Signs even started to go up, you know, no Jews admitted, in stronger words than that. What happened was, it was discovered in the late 1890s that tuberculosis, which was rampant in the world, but especially in New York City, especially in the United States, doctors were sending their patients down south where it was warm, well, and they would die. What did work as a cure was crisp, cold mountain air. So there was a tubercular sanitarium in the Adirondacks, which were very effective, but the Catskills were even closer and had the exact same climate as the Adirondacks. So doctors started sending their patients there, and the rich people who were fraternizing all the better establishments and watering holes in the Catskills fled. The places were empty. The Catskills became a ghost town, literally, with all the dying tubercular patients. And when real estate prices fell, Jews from the Lower East Side went up there and tried to farm, which much of them had done in the old country. But the soil in the Catskills didn't lend itself to growing crops. It was all rocks. So they could raise chickens, raise cows. They could have butter and eggs and feed guests who would come up for weekends. So boarding houses were how it all started, including the Grossinger family in 1914. And from then on, the thing just kept growing. And why it really took off after World War II was, you know, it was that post-war booming economy.
And the sheer number of hotels, and I think, you know, obviously we talk about Kutcher's and Brown's and Concord and
right.
Grossinger's and so there's so many, but that's just scratching the surface. I mean,
there were 1,000 hotels at one time.
That's unbelievable.
I forget how many rooms to fill every weekend, and they did.
And then they didn't.
Well, that's a series of circumstances.
Yes.
The older generation, it all happened sort of mid-60s. What happened was air conditioning came in. You weren't desperate to get out of the city to go up there. The flight to the suburbs, you could have your own swimming pool. Cheap airfares to Europe. You know, the older generation had too many sour memories of Europe. They didn't go there, but their kids wanted to, and airfare was cheap. But another big factor that's overlooked, in 1964, Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act. Well, not only were African Americans, you know, benefiting from this, But Jews who had been kept out of certain hotels in America, that restriction no longer applied. So they weren't confined to these hotels in the Catskills. They could go to any area of the United States and stay in any hotel they wanted, and that set everything free.
So as we wrap up, where are we in the history now, do you think?
The Catskills are bouncing back. Nobody thought it was possible. For 50 years, they tried to get gambling up there, and whether the first casino has been officially sanctioned by Governor Cuomo. It will open in 2017. Whether that will work or not, look at Atlantic City, we don't really know. But there is great gentrification up there. People, the Hamptons are overpriced. No one can afford houses there. So young people are turning to the Catskills. There are microbreweries up there. There are bakeries up there. There's a restaurant scene up there. And it's the place to go. Condé Nast Traveler and the New York Times are always touting places to go in the Catskills this weekend. So it's alive. The hills are alive again.
Well, the Catskills, its history, and how it changed America is the name of the book. It's just gorgeous. It's published by Knopf. Now, Steven Silverman is going to be at the following places talking about and signing this book. He will be at Oblong Books and Music in Rhinebeck tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Tomorrow at 7, go to oblongbooks.com. On Saturday, he's going to be doing an event for the Catskill Mountain Foundation in Hunter, New York, a presentation, and will be signing books, and that's at 1 o'clock. And then on the 21st, he'll be at the Bookhouse at Stuyvesant Plaza and at 3. And then on Sunday, the 22nd, he'll be at the Albany Institute of History and Art. So a lot going on, a lot of cool things. And again, the name of the book is The Catskills, Its History, and How It Changed America. Steven Silverman, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much.
No, thank you.
Great pleasure. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.